Senator Bob Smith, welcome to All Things Considered.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure, always.
You have written in your campaign website about the need to overhaul the federal tax system, and this is something that has been proposed numerous ways and numerous times. What would an overhaul look like at the federal level for the tax system, and ideally, what would it contain?
Well, there's certainly many options out there, from a flat tax to all kinds of tax reforms. But I think most significantly, I would say, cut corporate taxes, cut capital gain taxes on businesses, because that will spur economic growth. Cut the individual tax brackets and make it as easy as possible for people to retain their income and use it, to their own at their own discretion, as opposed to having more and more going into the federal treasury or any government treasury for that matter. But the income tax itself is a mess. I mean, the whole system is a mess. It's too complicated, too complex. It has to be simplified. And some propose a flat tax. I mean, to get a major overhaul like that in one swoop is not going to be easy. I would support a flat tax. But on the other hand, then you got to get into all the issues of what do you exclude from the deductions and what do you include for deductions and all this kind of stuff. And what's fair food, where do you go? So it's a big deal. But I think most significantly and most directly, and what we need to do right away, is simplify the code, number one, cut taxes on the individual and on corporations, eliminate things like the death tax, the corporate tax, reduce the corporate tax, eliminate capital gains, or reduce it dramatically so that you spur economic growth. So those would be some of the things that I would do real quickly.
You mentioned the idea that comes up in many of these tax debates about what's fair to tax and what's unfair to tax. And one of the ideas that often gets discussed in this is the idea of the income inequality gap, that for lack of a better way to describe it, the rich getting richer and the poor not being able to advance. What, if anything, should the federal government do through taxes or through other methods to deal with that idea of income inequality in the U.S.?
Well, I think the most important thing to understand in our system is the opportunity, equal opportunity, but not equal results. I mean, you're never going to get equal results. I think we have the opportunity for people to start a business or to do whatever they wish to do in terms of an occupation or living. And that's really what the main thrust should be, equal opportunity. I think this division that we see happening now, dividing the rich from the poor, dividing the black and the white, dividing, Hispanic community from another community, dividing the North and the South. All this divisiveness, I don't think is healthy for America. We are one country. We are one people. We are the United States of America. So I would, I would prefer to say that we have equal opportunity, to give as much opportunity as possible, make it as the government should be in that regard, has a role to provide for equal opportunity, but not equal results.
On the topic of division, and as a someone who has been in the U.S. Senate before, this is no surprise to you that there's a lot of division in that body right now. And because of the way the Senate operates procedurally, that means that one side or the other can and often does block proposals from the other side to move forward. The Senate Democratic majority changed the rules on certain kinds of filibustering, on moving nominations forward, for example. Are there when do you find it to be appropriate to use that power, either by the majority or the minority, to block something from moving forward to get a final vote?
Well, I think Senator Reid made a mistake there, and I'll get to our side of the aisle on it in a moment. When you try to mess with the rules when you're in the majority to get an advantage, it'll come back to bite you. It usually does. Some of the strongest conservatives in the U.S. Senate, like Jesse Helms, for example, would never have supported. In fact, he was asked to support changes in the rules when we, the Republicans, had the majority, and he refused because he respected the process. And the Senate was designed to delay, to make sure that whatever passes through the House has an opportunity to be heard, to be aired, to make sure that it is, in fact, good legislation. Now, if you like something and you want it passed and somebody's delaying it, you don't like it. You're mad. You know, you say, oh, they're delaying my bill. But on the other hand, if it's something you don't want passed, such as Obamacare, in my case, I didn't want that passed, well, then delay is fine. You like it. So I think when you mess with the rules, when you can, because you're in the majority, you know, majority has a very interesting responsibility, which is often overlooked, which is to protect the rights of the minority. And I think when you go away from that, it's a two-headed snake, and it'll come back and bite you.
Since you mentioned health care, Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, as it's called, you've proposed an alternative based on in part on principles in a plan from the Heritage Foundation, the conservative think tank. And one of the proposals in that plan is a tax credit for individuals who could then buy individual plans or obtain coverage through an employer. For, say, a low-income worker in America or in New Hampshire who might have been previously unable to get coverage, how does this approach compare to the Affordable Care Act model where you could buy a plan through one of the state or federal marketplaces and possibly get subsidies for that?
Well, you see, this is the problem with the whole plan, is the sense that you're directed and you're told that you have to buy something, that you have to purchase a health care plan, if you will, or health insurance policy from the federal government through the exchanges. This is a directive, and if you don't, you can't get it. Now, that's not right, number one. I would like to see one of the things that I would propose, I would like to see us have the opportunity to opt out. If I don't want to be part of Obamacare, if I don't want to be in the exchanges, then I should. It's still a free country. We should have the free choice here to say this is not for me. I don't want to be in a one size fits all system. I want to be able to pick and choose. I want to be able to choose the coverage that I want, that I need. I don't need maternity care as a man, and women don't need prostate protection, obviously. So, why have this one size fits all? And I know what the answer is, and I know what Obama says, throw them all in the pool. Everybody has to be in the same pool to bring the rates down. No, what'll bring the rates down, they're not coming down. That's the bottom line. We've increased the subsidies. We increased the number of people who are getting subsidies. But the point is, if you want to really have a fair system under the American way, it's bring the competition in, increase the competition, and bring the rates down, and have individuals have the right to choose the plan that's best for them. And those who think this is, you know, the answer, then let them have it. I mean, knock yourself out, choose Obamacare, but don't make me choose it if I don't want it. And I think that that's what I think we should do. If everybody feels that strongly about it, Senator Shaheen feels so good strong about it, hey, have it. You can have it, but I don't want it. And a lot of people that I know don't want it. Now, there are things we can protect, like pre-existing conditions, which we should. If you go to Sacramento, California for a new job, your policy should follow you. At least the pre-existing conditions should be allowed to be placed into the next policy that you get. That's fair. But we could increase competition, allow insurance to be sold across state lines. It doesn't have to follow you through the employer. It can follow you as an individual, so that you then can go to a number of companies and take a pick. If you think when Senator Shaheen was governor, we had 25 or 30 health insurance providers in the state. We're now down to one, maybe two or three, with a couple more coming. And that's not good. That's not competition. That's not what America is all about. And you could go on this plan, the faults with it. But, you know, I think most importantly is you're going to get to the point where some type of rationing is going to have to happen, because you got people going into a system, more and more people coming into a system. If you think of air going into a balloon, it blows that balloon up in the sense that more and more people in it, that's bulging out. Where do you draw the line? Some rationing is going to have to take place, which means that somebody's going to have to make a decision about who gets treated and who doesn't, at what point in their life, in their lives. And that's not going to be good. And if you look at the health, what's going on now in the VA, that happened not because of money, but because these were government officials who really weren't paying attention, weren't doing their job, and people suffered. And I don't want anybody making a decision for my health care other than my doctor, myself, and my family. If I'm not able to do it, then my family and my doctor. But I don't want anybody else making that decision. And people who are now getting involved in this and supporting this program are going to regret it. It's never worked. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in Canada. Talk to any physician that came down out of the Canadian system, and they'll tell you it's a two-tiered system. People who have the money will go somewhere else. They're not going to sit around and wait for 6 months to be treated for breast cancer or any other type of illness, which could be terminal if it's not treated properly and early. So there are a lot of problems here. And again, I go back to my main point. If you like it so much, go ahead. But don't force everybody else into it. So my solution is you may have it, Gene, and myself and other people that I know who would like to not be involved in a mandate like this, they don't have it. They don't have to have it. That'd be a good solution.
You mentioned among the ways to try and increase competition would be to allow insurance to be sold over state lines. Does that raise a concern, though, that you may have a race to the bottom where you have insurance plans that are being sold in other states that may not meet with what New Hampshire's laws and regulations would require that can then be sold in this state, and there then can be concerns in the state about the quality of the care, or that it's cheap insurance but not necessarily good insurance?
Well, sure, that could happen. If there are always bad people, bad companies, fraudulent companies, if you will. I mean, that happens. That's the system. Unfortunately, we have people who do cheat and do things in a way that is not always honest. But that doesn't mean we have to support those companies, and it doesn't mean that those companies won't be exposed. I mean, it's not going to take long, for people to figure it out who is really providing the proper coverage and who isn't. If you're selling insurance at a very low rate, and you're cutting the coverage and the protection, it won't take long for the population to figure it out, and that those companies are not going to make it. That's the free market. I mean, if you're selling bad hamburgers, you're not going to sell hamburgers. Somebody else selling good hamburgers, you're going to sell them. I mean, so sometimes it takes a little while to figure it out, but the truth is, this is America, and in America, we have competition, we have choice, we choose plans that we want, health care. And more importantly, we choose our own doctors. We choose our own hospitals. I mean, we choose our own providers. I mean, I don't like the fact that Senator Shaheen stands on the floor of the United States Senate and says, I can keep my doctor if I want to. Well, that's not America. You choose your doctor because you can. It's your right to do it. I don't need permission from the government to pick my doctor or my hospital. And I don't want permission from the government to do it. I want to be able to do it on my own and my own volition. So if I get a lousy insurance company that's providing lousy insurance, I'm not going to go there, and neither is anybody else. Look, you can use the same – you can say auto insurance, life insurance. There are all kinds of other insurances out there that flood insurance, you name it. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. And the ones that are bad, we have insurance regulations in state by state. They watch this kind of stuff. Those people – I think that's overplayed. That was – stated by President Obama early on in the discussion of this, but like many of the other things he told us were true, that was not true. There are people who are fraudulent, but they're not running the show. They're mostly good companies. And look, the proof's in the pudding. The cost in these exchanges are high. I mean, not low. I mean, people are paying more to get less. They're paying higher premiums to get higher deductibles. That doesn't make any sense, and they're required to do it. And the only other option is I don't get it. I don't get the insurance. So I don't get the insurance. What happens then? I get fined. Guess who implements the fine? Lowest earner, the IRS. Wow. Now, that's a comforting thought. Somebody who lost 2 years of emails and takes the Fifth Amendment and she's now going to be the enforcer and tell me I have to pay a fine that comes out of my income tax refund because I don't want her. I don't want the health insurance that's being thrown at me from Obamacare. That's not right. And I think the American people are figuring it out.
One more question on health care before we move on. You'd also proposed changes to Medicaid to subsidize private health insurance for low-income Medicaid beneficiaries, which sounds similar to what New Hampshire's legislature adopted as part of the Medicaid expansion under Affordable Care Act. Is New Hampshire potentially, or is what New Hampshire has put together on Medicaid expansion, potentially a model for other states.
No, I think the Medicaid expansion decision was a mistake. Medicaid, you're talking about, right?
Medicaid. Mm-hmm.
Medicaid expansion was a mistake, because what's going to happen is the feds will pull the rug out in whatever it is. I think it's 4 years, but maybe it was five. The state was a close vote. Some Republicans, unfortunately, from my perspective, joined the Democrats to pass this expansion. But when the plug is pulled and the feds don't fund it anymore, you're going to be stuck with an unfunded mandate. And you've now got people who are much higher income brackets who are now covered under Medicaid. You've changed the whole equation. So I don't support what happened here with Medicaid expansion.
You had mentioned earlier about the VA, and there was the plan that the Senate recently passed to provide additional funding to try to address the issues at the VA, the long wait times for some patients, and the reports of falsifying records. Is the bill that the Senate passed going to address those concerns, do you think?
No. No, this is a typical example of a huge mistake where you get all of these problems, and then we say it's a funding problem. I don't have the exact numbers, but I know that the funding for the VA has increased pretty dramatically in the last few years. The question is, what do you do with it? How do you treat your veterans? It's a question of priority. It's a question of paying attention to what's happening to these people who are people who have served our country, who are now basically being abused, neglected, overlooked, and put under ridiculous requirements. Every veteran, in my view, especially veterans who have been in combat or served in wartime, but all veterans, in my view, ought to have a gold card, for want of a better word, a card that would say, "Here I am. I'm sick. I need help. I need emergency treatment, or I need some kind of treatment. I present my card. I can go to any hospital, any facility, anywhere in America. We'll figure it out later on how you're going to be compensated, or how the institution or hospital, whoever treats you, will be compensated. But take care of the veteran first." So these are the kinds of reforms that we need. Somebody made mistakes big time in the way this was handled. And just throwing more money at the problem doesn't solve it. You have to implement the structural changes in the VA system that caused this to happen. And you know, why did it happen? I mean, General Shinseki was an honorable man. He served the United States Army. He was the chief of staff of the U.S. Army. I knew him. He's a good man. But hey, somebody messed up here, and he had to go. I mean, he deserved to go. And to that extent, he wasn't a good man in terms of the way he handled the VA. But you need somebody that knows what they're doing, and it involves not only money, but it involves a respect and an understanding of veterans and what happens and what has happened here. And I would do dramatic reforms in the whole VA system. I would, again, start with that gold card that allows a veteran to go where he or she wants to go, when they need to go. That should not be a restriction. If they choose outpatient services somewhere and they want to go there as opposed to traveling some long distance, so what? I mean, that's their choice. Let them have the choice. But for heaven's sakes, for at all costs, treat the veteran when they need help. Don't put them off. And, I mean, any organization, as happened out in Phoenix, where a guy comes in, he's diagnosed with something, say a tumor, and then he doesn't get to see a doctor for 6 months. I mean, that's an outrage. And money's not going to solve that problem. Firing people is going to solve that problem. And again, getting in there and finding out just what happened and why it happened and change it. That's what's going to change it. And it's not going to happen by throwing – as a matter of fact, you throw more money at it, the same people do the same thing, waste the money.
A question on foreign policy for you. You've said that the problems in the Middle East can only be solved by the people in the Middle East. And this is conflating a lot of different issues, from Iraq to Syria to Afghanistan to Israel. How does the U.S. ensure that its strategic interests in the region, such as making sure that a country like Afghanistan doesn't become another breeding ground for terrorists, how does the U.S. advance those strategic objectives in the Middle East while then also adhering to that goal where the people in the Middle East are the ones solving the problem? What's the role that the U.S. plays then?
Well, I think the mistake that has been made by two presidents, both Obama and his predecessor, President Bush, is the issue of nation building. That is not the job of the United States. It's not the job of the U.S. military for sure. We had an opportunity to visit some people, soldiers who were flew in from Fort Hood. We were at one of the greeters and talked to them. They came in, came off the plane for 2 or 3 hours, took a break and while the plane was refueling, then went off to Afghanistan. And in talking to some of these people privately, these soldiers, I asked them, what was your biggest concern? They said, well, rules of engagement. We go in, our hands are tied behind our back. We can't shoot until we're shot at. We have to be very careful not to make a mistake, shoot the wrong target. I mean, this is war. But, you know, you got press embedded with them. They're watching everything you do. And so the question really gets down to this. Is nation building what our armed forces were trained to do? The answer is no. So they were trained to fight and, yes, trained to kill. That's what their job is. And they know how to do that. They're the best in the world. However, putting them in situations, and you've seen it constantly on TV where – you have a group of 15 – well, the movie, the recent movie – what's the name of that movie? About the group of soldiers that were surrounded by the Taliban in this valley, and they're firing down on them from mountaintops. This is the United States of America. We have the most – we have the greatest weapons in the world. We have the most sophisticated army in the world. Why does this happen? So, look, for – since Muhammad – in 632 A.D., I think that's when Muhammad passed away. Now, centuries have gone by, and we have religious, cultural, and tribal warfare going on in this region. And putting the United States in there and trying to police that or enforce that, A, it hasn't worked, and B, it won't work. It hasn't worked in the past. We cannot build nations that way. They must have the desire to have a democracy. They must have the soil, if you will, to grow a democracy. They don't have it. They're not. That's not who they are at this point in time. Maybe centuries from now, maybe different. But right now, that's not the case. So we're dealing with tribal, cultural, religious warfare that we can't win by putting our forces in there in a hopeless situation. And when you announce the timetable when you're leaving, I support leaving. But don't put the timetable out there. Do it on our terms and leave, but don't tell the enemy what you're doing. So this is a real problem, and we have to ask ourselves, what are our strategic interests there? Now, when Osama bin Laden attacked us on 9/11, we knew where he operated out of. He operated in Afghanistan. We had a right to go after him, and we did. But when you now we've gone to the next level, and we put boots on the ground in there trying to turn Afghanistan into a democracy, turn Iraq into a democracy, and it's not working. And so we need to look at our own strategic interests, and I think our strategic interests are to get out of there. Now, Israel's a different story. Israel, we've helped. Israel's a nation that's we've always been supportive of, the U.S. has, and we have we have helped them with weapons, but they know how to handle themselves on the ground. They don't need U.S. forces on the ground. They need a little help with some of the weapons, but they can handle themselves. I know Netanyahu personally. I think he can handle himself real well.
What about a situation like what's going on, say, in Central America, where there have been calls to boost countries like Guatemala to provide more aid to address the circumstances which the officials there are saying are prompting people to send children up over the U.S.-Mexico border. Is that a situation where the calculus of the situation – is the calculus of the situation different there where there's a very clear U.S. strategic interest in trying to address the situation before it comes to the United States?
Well, good question. I think the issue here is you have to ask yourself, we understand the squalor and the poverty and the class system, if you will, that exists in some of those Central American countries. Now, and I can understand a person being locked up in that and wondering how in the world they're ever going to get out of it. However, why are these people whether they be children or in many cases adults, why are they coming here? They're not going across hundreds of miles of Mexico and stopping at the border and coming across with nobody to greet them. They haven't, and they're also getting on airplanes and not even stopping at the border and flying into U.S. cities. Now, if they know that they're going to be received here illegally in violation of U.S. laws, which they are, if they know that, well, of course, they're going to do it. They're going to try to get here. The U.S. is saying, come on, it's okay. We're going to disperse you throughout America, wherever, 13 in New Hampshire, 40 in Omaha, Nebraska, wherever. I mean, you come, you have a phone number and an address, and away you go. No questions asked, no identification, no checking for illness, no checking to see whether you're what your background is, who you are, did you just get out of prison, or who are you? And who are these? Who are they're not all children. Some of these are teenagers, and some of them are adults. So the bottom line is what something has transpired between these governments and the United States, which I'm not on the inside, so I don't know, but that says you folks are welcome. We're going to let you come because no one is going to send their children on an airplane or across a remote area of Mexico to get to the U.S. border in either case unless you know that there's somebody there to greet them, to help them, to take care of them. And we basically, I think, have given that assurance. That's why they're coming. So these are not political refugees. This is not Cuba. This is poverty, yeah, but the poverty can be addressed by the countries who have this poverty, and maybe they can be addressed in some way, in some relationship between the United States and those countries in terms of whatever, some bilateral agreements, I don't know. But to say to these people, come on in and break our borders down is a terrible mistake. It violates U.S. immigration laws. It violates all immigration laws, in my view. And it does. All it does is take our borders down. They're now not porous. There aren't any. It just basically says, look, if you're poor and you live in Guatemala, you want to come to America, come on. It's okay. We're not going to do anything about it. We're going to let you in. We're not even going to tell New Hampshire where the 13 that came in. We don't know. The governor doesn't know. No one else knows. They just came in. So we got a U.S. government now just basically taking these people and said, go where you want to go. Or not go where you want to go. Here's where you go, where you'll be taken care of and you'll be given asylum. And this is wrong. And it's a violation of not only immigration laws, it's a violation of the U.S. Constitution, in my opinion. We have a right to protect our borders. It's in the interest of national security, economic security. It's immoral to do it. It's not fair to people who are in line, who want to come here legally. Our country was built by legal immigration. All of us came here from somewhere, or our ancestors did, and so it's bizarre. I understand the situation where people come across the border. We've heard a lot about that over the years, people crossing the river and all that. Excuse me, but this fact that they can get on an airplane, ignore the border, and land in a U.S. city, and then be disseminated throughout the country without even being tracked, with no identification. We don't know who they are. It's bizarre, number one. Number two, it's wrong. It's unlawful. And it's a violation of the Constitution and our laws. So the point is we need to control our borders. I don't believe in amnesty. End amnesty, because as long as you have people welcomed here, getting amnesty when they get here, then you get with the anchor baby deal, you get people here. Well, it's not exactly anchor babies, but you get people here in America, and then the rest of the family comes. And I don't know what's going on with President Obama, but this is wrong, and I hear a lot about it on the campaign trail, and it's not very well received.
One last question. I like to ask this as the last question with each of these conversations. Say you win the nomination. Say you win the Senate seat, 6 years go by. What do you point to in 2020 to say to New Hampshire, this is the change that Senator Bob Smith brought to the country?
Wow. Well, one senator probably is not going to be able to do it by himself or herself, that's for sure. But I think what your role is as a senator is not only to vote, which we, of course, do, but it's to lead. I mean, it's to take a leadership role and try to correct things that are wrong or, on the other side, reinforce things that are right. And we need to I think if we could turn the debt around in the sense that when we watch the debt clock, it's going down instead of up, I think that would be where we're if we could say in 6 years that Bob Smith had a role in leading to balance the budget, get the budget balanced and begin to pay the debt down, I would consider that a huge positive thing that I've accomplished. Certainly, we just talked about immigration. If we stopped the flow of illegal immigrants and respected our laws and protected our borders, if I were to play a role in that, I would be very, very pleased with that. I think we could go down a number of issues. Energy, we're just ignoring the energy that we have in this country, which is making us dependent upon foreign oil, specifically Middle Eastern oil. I'd like to see us get more involved in finding and processing more energy, whether it's nuclear power, whether it's coal, more drilling for oil, and other energies as well. I mean, we use them all. I don't want to put anything off the table that might work, but I don't believe in subsidies. I just think let the free market produce the energy that we need. I mean, go down the list. I mean, I don't know how far you want to go, but I think those are certainly big issues. From a personal perspective, I'd like to see we get to a point in this country where we didn't have to be dealing with the abortion issue. I'd like to see a country that respected life. Abortion is not pretty, whichever side you're on. It's not a pretty subject. It's not a pretty, abortion clinics are not nice places. And so it would be nice if we didn't have to have this debate anymore because we respected life, and that was that. And people could be have the ultimate right, the right to be born, which is the ultimate freedom. And I think finally, if you look back on it from a personal perspective for me, there are a lot of assaults now on our freedoms, and I hear it everywhere. You know, the NSA issue, where people are being spied upon, their emails, their computers, you name it, their phones, all being checked and counter-checked by people we don't even know, and who knows what they look like with their glasses and suits, and they're hunkered down somewhere listening to our personal information. That's wrong. It has to stop. It's a way of violation of the Constitution. It's totally disrespecting the Fourth Amendment. And then also the harassment of people because of their political beliefs. That's another two-headed snake. I know Senator Shaheen wrote some letters on that, looking into people because of their political beliefs. That's a very short-sighted thing to do. It's a big mistake. So I want to see that stopped. I want to see respect for the Constitution again, respect for Fourth Amendment rights. Search and seizure only when there's probable cause. And I think those are a few things that if I could look back and say I played a role, obviously I'm not doing it myself, but if I could play a role by talking about those issues on the floor, taking a leadership role, and pointing out to my colleagues, either right or wrong, depending on which side you come down on these issues, that we need to change this for the good of America and save America, I think all in all it'd be a pretty good 6 years.
That's Senator Bob Smith. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.